pets are on our mind here on The Morning Show. Thanks for joining us. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent. And we're dedicating the next hour to our four-legged friends. We've got a vet at the ready to answer our questions about pet health this summer in a pandemic. And we have a line for you open right now, 800-642-1234. Are you spending more time at home with your pets because of the coronavirus pandemic? How are you managing this situation? What questions do you have about your pet's health, about exercise or diet or behavior? Maybe your pet's facing surgery. Ask us your questions at 800-642-1234. You can also email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Douglas Kratt is a small animal practitioner at Central Animal Hospital in Onalaska. His medical interests include surgery, nutrition, wellness care, and prevention. He is president-elect of the American Veterinary Medical Association. Dr. Kratt, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Thank you for having me this morning.
How is this pandemic affecting the work of veterinarians?
Well, you know, I think the pandemic's affecting work of everyone, but veterinarians being no different. We have been labeled as essential service the whole time. So most veterinarians, veterinary clinics have been open with modifications during this pandemic. A lot of clinics have been offering what they call curbside service, or some people have put the term concierge service on it, where they're limiting individuals from coming in their practices, but still being able to offer care. We've also gotten a little bit innovative using technology with that, with telemedicine, or even if the people don't feel comfortable coming in the clinic, potentially doing a FaceTime type of a consult outside with the pet in the clinic with the veterinarian and the staff.
What does telemedicine look like when it comes to animal care? I mean, I think we understand what it looks like when it comes to people. Is it different in animals?
Well, you know, it's a little bit different because there needs to be, I guess the best way to put it, a translator in between, right? So
yeah.
Our telemedicine has the pet owner on the other end of the device, giving us, still taking the history and everything, and then helping us with the cameras and whatnot on the smart devices or tablets or whatnot, with being able to show us the potential important things on our patients.
Yeah, I can see, though, how in human beings it might be easier for us if we're thinking about our bodies to go, OK, this is a little bit painful, but I'm OK. This is not an emergency, or I really have to get to the doctor right now because something's very wrong. Because our pets can't tell us that, how do we gauge whether telemedicine is the right option or if animal owners really need to visit a clinic right away?
I think you hit it on the head. So we, you know, that issue is the same whether we're using telemedicine or not, right? Our patients can't tell us, so we have to observe, and we rely on that partnership with the owners to do it. So the first step to determine, to triage this, to determine is it an emergency we have to come in right now? Is it something that we can use the platform for telemedicine would be appropriate? That is a partnership with the clinic. So the first and foremost thing is get on the phone, talk to your veterinarian, and work through whether they think you need to actually have a pause on the ground, so to speak, in the clinic, or can this be something that can be done by a consult over the phone or over a specific app that way.
So like so many things in our lives, communication key here.
Always, right? I think in my field in veterinary medicine, communication is really important, making sure that we're talking the same language and understanding what the concerns are.
Dr. Doug Kratt is a veterinarian at Central Animal Hospital in Onalaska, and he's taking your calls this morning at 800-642-1234. Has your cat or dog been sick lately? What do you think might be the problem? Maybe you're in that circumstance where you're trying to figure out, is this important enough that I should contact a vet? Let's talk about what you see in your pets when you're home with them more now. 800-642-1234. Or maybe you are now back to work some of the time, or you're spending more time away from home. What changes in your pets are you noticing? Let's talk about it with our doctor. 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. Dr. Kratt, what about the risks for COVID-19 in pets? We've seen kind of small fringe studies, right, that it may be possible, but maybe they can't, but maybe they're carriers. Can you do some myth busting for us?
You bet. So we do have some confirmed cases worldwide that pets have contracted COVID from us. There's been no cases of our pets being able to replicate the virus and transmit it back to us. And so, yep, our pets have the ability. It is extremely rare. So I want to put a big asterisk on that and exclamation points. It's extremely rare for our pets to contract COVID-19 from us. But it is a possibility. A little bit of guidance there would be, if you're not feeling well, try not to snuggle too much with your pet. Practice your good hygiene, wash your hands, wear your mask, do those type of things around your pet. That being said, if your pet's not feeling well, the first thing I would recommend doing, as always, is kind of get an idea of why you think your pet's not feeling well, and then call your veterinarian and find out how you want to take the steps forward from that. But, you know, the pets have had both positive and negative impact within the COVID aspect of things.
Yeah, well, so many pets respond so much to human beings not feeling well. So I think it's might be kind of hard if your cat or dog is you know, really supportive and you're not well and they just want to be right there with you. You're saying, well, you know, that might not always be the right call.
Right, and just use proper hygiene. So, you know, cover your face if you're coughing and wash mm-hmm. your hands and those type of situations, and try not to transmit it to your pet. Realize that pets can transmit the virus a lot like your countertop or doorknobs can transmit it as well. So if they're in an environment where you suspect someone else may be sick, you probably want to keep your pet out of that region as well, if at all possible.
How should we think about exercise in our pets? How do we gauge what's appropriate for the creature who lives with us?
Well, you know, that's probably one of the biggest questions I had at the beginning of the restrictions in Wisconsin. And now we're getting a different set of questions. But, you know, you can't go from 0 to 60, right? You need to train a little bit. You can't go out and run a marathon if you haven't been exercising for a while. So for the exercise, I think you ease into it. You know, you go for some shorter walks and hikes, even if it's a couple times a day. Now that we're getting into summer and hot weather, we have to be cognizant of that as well, because we have to make sure that our pets don't overheat. They always have to take their fur coat with them, so to speak, when they go outside. So they're already dressed for winter to a certain extent. So we just have to take that all into account.
All right. We are talking with Dr. Doug Kratt, who's a veterinarian in Onalaska, and we're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You can also email us your questions, your stories at ideas@wpr.org. We are wondering, how are you trying to protect your pets from the heat, from ticks and fleas? Are you wondering about whether your cat or dog might be overweight? Maybe you've noticed their behavior has changed a little bit, and you're trying to figure out if it's just a little quirk or if it's something that you should see a vet about. Let's talk about it here on the Ideas Network. Again, that number, 800-642-1234. Our conversation continues this hour of the morning show. I'm Keely Boltina. We're looking for your call. We are trying to keep ourselves and our families healthy right now, and that includes our pets. But with infinite advice from fellow pet owners, it's sometimes hard to know which ways are the best ways to care for our pets. you've got a question about your furry friend, you've come to the right place. It's the Morning Show on the Ideas Network. I'm Keely Boltina. Our guest is Dr. Doug Kratt. He's a veterinarian here in Wisconsin, and we're taking your calls, your questions about pet health at 800-642-1234. Again, that's 800-642-1234. And we've got Joe from Appleton ready to talk with us. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. Hello, Dr. Pratt. I have a 2-year-old cat that I rescued from under my deck a few years ago. Her name is Mew, and I often wonder if I'm giving her the right food. She's an indoor cat. I don't let her out. But there's so many myths about what food contains, grain-free, all that sort of terminology that's out there. So I was wondering what you could give as guidance about feeding your cat or dog or whatever, but what's with the food today? What should I look for?
Oh, Joe, what a great question. Thank you for calling. Dr. Kratt.
Well, thank you for rescuing Mew, first and foremost. I think giving these pets good homes is a great thing. You know, Joe, you hit a question that doesn't have an easy answer. There are so many choices out on there. It just takes a walk through one of the pet stores to see that it seems like the choices are infinite. I think a good quality food, and that's a very vague statement, but, you know, we look at feeding a food, don't do many changes, try to stay with a consistent food the best you can, and it would take almost 90 days to see how your pet reacts to that. And I look at things like, how is the hair coat doing? Is there excessive shedding? Does the coat shine? That's probably the first thing. Does your pet have potentially more gas with it when it's on that food, especially after we've been on it for a little bit and it's not going away? And how do the stool samples look, or your bowel movements look? Are they looking okay? And I know for breakfast conversation, that's a little bit hard. I am not a fan of grain-free diets. The main reason I am, if there's a health and a medical reason for it, I think it's perfectly fine to do them, because some of the pets I treat need to be on grain-free. But there has been some research recently, especially in the dog population, that says grain-free diets may actually increase the risk of heart disease. So I think versus talking about brands of food, I do look for good quality ingredients towards the upper end of the list. So usually regular or whole meat type of situations and going down that. But ultimately, I think depending upon the pet, I try to evaluate the foods that the pet eats. The other thing I'm a big fan of is I meal feed pets. So measured amounts of food 2 or 3 times a day, depending upon lifestyles, to make sure that they're eating, that they're keeping on their normal routines and their normal activities. And that way, if they're off their game a little bit, we can probably pick it out within 8 or 12 hours. Versus potentially if I just leave a dish or a self-feeder out, it could take me much longer to determine if they're not eating as well.
All right, Joe, hopefully that helps you when you're trying to figure out what works best for Mew. Thanks for that call. We are taking your calls at 800-642-1234, talking with veterinarian Dr. Doug Kratt. And we've got Russ from Stoughton, who's also wondering about food. Hi, Russ.
Hi, good morning. I have relatively the same question as the last caller. And like you said, there's so many brands. I have a 7-year-old Shiba Inu, and I feed him basically a kibble-type food. And I was wondering, there's so many ingredients listed on the back of the bag. I was wondering, is there an ingredient I want to see on there, or one I don't want to see on there?
Oh, Russ, thank you for that question. Dr. Kratt, what about the ingredients themselves?
So, Russ, again, I think it's a matter of with your Shibu. If your Shibu has more skin-related issues, in my practice, I typically have a recommend foods that have higher omega-3 fatty acids. So that might be more fish oil or flaxseed oil in it. So those are aspects of it. If we find out that your pet has more gas because it may be more sensitive to beef, then I would say look for a chicken or a lamb product. Those are the type of situations that I am there. I know a lot of people get concerned about the phrase byproduct on there. Again, I go back to looking at how the pet does on things. The other thing I do in these stores, because my pets have been on numerous different foods and my family's pets have been on numerous different foods, is I also try to look at how frequently the foods are getting turned over. Does it look like this bag of food's been around for a while? Most of the foods have expiration dates on it, so I want to look for the dating on it. Those are the type of things that I'm there. If I have 100 different types of dog food on my shelf, am I having the number of bags being sold where I can get fresh food in all the time, or does one bag have a tendency to move a little bit slower? If it does, then that may not be the direction that I would go.
Sure. Just an indicator that it doesn't work for a wide swath of the population. There may be a reason for that. Dr. Doug Kratt is a veterinarian at Central Animal Hospital in Onalaska. He's also president-elect of the American Veterinary Medical Association. And we're taking your calls this morning at 800-642-1234. Are you spending more time at home with your pets right now? How are you managing that situation? What have you noticed about your dog or your cat that maybe you didn't when you were out of the house more? What question do you have for a vet? We're taking your calls at 800-642-1234. You can also use that email address, ideas@wpr.org. Dr. Kratt, a few of our WPR colleagues shared some questions with us about pets. Stephanie has a small elderly dog with heart disease and arthritis. And Stephanie is actually having some trouble sleeping because the dog snores really loudly and cries if kept out of her bed. Any tips for Stephanie here?
Well, so Stephanie's at that point with her pet that with the heart disease and with probably some arthritis that she has unique examples of it. The crying, staying out of the bed, that's more of a lifelong type of a trained response, in all honesty. My pets do it to me that they'll whine or vocalize to me to get my attention. And they've trained me, I guess is the best way that I put it, right, to accept it. Now, in an older dog, it's going to be tough to untrain some of those, but not impossible. The snoring is because, you know, the collagen and the tissues, the things that make our skin a little bit tighter and the rest of our tissues a little bit tighter is starting to weaken up a little bit. It's why humans get wrinkles as well. So that's more from where the snoring aspect is coming from over time. Make sure that sometimes if they'll sleep with their head propped up a little bit, the snoring will stop. Or if they're on their side, frequently the snoring will stop, and can also extend, you know, gently try to extend their neck to give them more of a straight path. That those would be the options that I would have for there. If the arthritis and things seem to be causing issues, there are a bunch of great medications out on the market now that can increase quality of life and comfort for our pets, and would highly recommend that she have a good conversation with her veterinarian on what might be the best choice for her in that aspect.
Yeah, Stephanie did say that dog painkillers have seemed to help, but there is that pull between, you know, the pharmaceutical, right? Is it okay to be, you know, putting drugs in my pet system, just like we think about people? What's your take on that?
So, you know, it's a fine line, and we do talk about multimodal pain control in veterinary medicine. So one of the discussions early on is, you know, maybe first step is a joint supplement of some sort. So the glucosamine and chondroitin, and there's other ones that are out there to be used. But I am not hesitant on going to pain relievers if necessary. And yes, there are risks associated with them, but I think understanding what any potential risk is, much like with you and I, there's risks with anything that we're taking and putting in our system. And just because it's not a drug, doesn't mean there's not risks without it as well. And so personally, you know, I've had pets throughout my life and I didn't hesitate to put them on a good pain reliever because I could see how much happier they were and how much more they were willing to go on those walks with me or to go chase the ball swimming or whatnot, and have just a happier, better quality of life happening, and but knowing that, yes, I may need to check some blood work to see how it's best going. Now, with Stephanie's case, there can be other medications involved because, as she talked about, there's heart disease and things like that. But, you know, working in conjunction with her veterinarian, letting them know whatever supplements she might be giving the pet and whatever other medications they're giving, I think they can probably come to a pretty good protocol and hopefully keep her pet very happy and healthy, and Stephanie as well.
Right. Dr. Doug Kratt is a veterinarian, and we're talking with him for the hour, taking your questions about pets. 800-642-1234. What question do you have about the pet who lives with you? What do you wonder about how vets treat pets and how they think about pet health? Maybe you're spending more time at home with your animals and you've noticed a different behavior, or you have a question about weight or about vaccinations. Give us a call at 800-642-1234. I'm Keely Boltina, and this is The Morning Show on the Ideas Network. The floppy-eared Boston Terrier at my place spends most of his time sleeping on the couch, or sleeping in the sliver of sunshine on the rug, or sleeping in my spot on the bed. He's got a checkup later today. I'll pull up in the parking lot and call the office. Then someone will come out to my car and get Gus. The doctor will do an exam, call me with what she sees, and we'll go from there. Pet health requires a different strategy in a pandemic. This is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina in for Kate Archer-Kent, and we're taking your questions about your dogs and your cats now. You can call 800-642-1234. What questions do you have for a veterinarian? What do you want to know about cats or dogs when it comes to food or exercise, health, behavior, surgery? All questions welcome at 800-642-1234. Our conversation continues here with Dr. Doug Kratt from Central Animal Hospital in Onalaska. And Dr. Kratt, with the changes because of COVID-19, how can pet owners make sure that we understand our pets' health conditions or situations when we can't be right in the room with them?
Well, so, you know, that's especially in the exam rooms. You're talking about your appointment today. I think you and I touched on it as communication. And 10 years ago or 15 years ago, this much might have been much more difficult than it is today. We have so many tools that we take for granted that is right there. But the pandemic, knowing how your pet's doing, there's been so many changes. But observation, you know, you're one of the people that knows your pet probably the best. And so looking at, are they on their normal routines? Are they eating the way they're supposed to? Do they want to go out to the bathroom? Are they drinking? Are they doing any of these things more often than they used to? Sometimes I tell people to set up a little bit of a log, because when you stare at them more, now that some of us may have been home for the last month or so, couple months, that they may be observing a lot more than they used to, and those may have been normal behaviors. But as far as with your veterinarian, you know, it seems like we're never more than a stone's throw away from some type of a video camera or device that can connect us with someone else, and using those technologies to our advantage, our pet's advantage, is a great thing.
Yeah. I mean, it's true that I think pet owners know their pets well, and we also know that vets are the experts. So there is a little bit of maybe hesitation if you disagree with a vet, or if you feel like you need more information. You know, you don't want to seem silly by pushing for that. What does a good vet to patient relationship look like?
It looks like a partnership to me. So, you know, I will get questions daily from Dr. Google, I'll be honest with you. And yeah, from a personal aspect, sometimes I do feel a little bit off put on it, because I'm the one that went to school and someone else that's answering on Dr. Google may or may not have done that. But on the same point, hopefully I can have the conversation in a calm manner, because that's the ultimate goal, with my clients, because we both have the same thing in mind, right? It's what's best for the pet and what's to keep them happy and healthiest the longest. So I think a good relationship is come in with questions, be prepared, come in with concerns. If you're not getting the answers that you're hoping for, they may not be the answers you always want, but the answers that you're hoping for is ask them again. Make sure that we understand, that I understand what questions you're asking if I'm not answering them, and then we'll try to work with it. And if that's not working, then potentially need to schedule with a different veterinarian in that practice, or find one that you work well with, because I think it is very much that veterinary patient client relationship is built upon trust and respect of each other, and that's really important.
We've got Georgiana from Milwaukee on the line now, who's got a question for us this morning. Georgiana, welcome to the Ideas Network.
Good morning. I've got a question. I've heard that there's a lot of ticks this year, and I'm wondering if there is a Lyme disease vaccination for dogs.
Thanks for the question. Go ahead, Dr. Kratt.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt. Yes,
no, you're fine.
There is a vaccine for Lyme disease in the area, and there has been for quite some time. But Georgiana, one of the things that I would caution you with is that I haven't seen the tick numbers this year yet, but I caution my clients that Lyme disease is only one of three tick-borne diseases that's recognized in the state of Wisconsin. So I believe in the Lyme vaccine, but I also believe in good flea and tick control, and there's a bunch of them out there. And that technology has changed in the last few years. But we also have things called Anaplasma and Ehrlichia, which can be harmful to your pet as well. So I just kind of tell everybody, let's think broad spectrum and not just focus on the one. And probably what I would say gets the most attention, attention in the Wisconsin region, but also talk about Anaplasma and Ehrlichia, which are other tick-borne diseases, and the Lyme vaccine itself will not help with those other diseases.
Georgiana, thanks for that question at 800-642-1234, talking to Dr. Doug Kratt. Well, what is then the best way to protect our animals from fleas and ticks?
So there's no one best way, because I think it's based upon lifestyle, and I think it's based upon the pet itself and the environment they live in. My personal pets are kept on both an what they call an endo and an ectoparasite control situation. So I treat my animals, get a heartworm, my dogs get a heartworm prevention every month, which also takes care of some of the intestinal parasites that they have. But then I also have chosen to go with an oral formula for my pets for flea and tick, at least my dogs for flea and tick. Because I, with some of the places I take them and our lifestyles, sometimes the topicals weren't as effective as I wanted them to be. And then I didn't want my parents, when they were alive, petting my pets when those solutions were on their back. So I chose to go a different direction that may not be right for everyone. And so it's really kind of tailoring it to the lifestyle of the pet and what the needs are.
Do more expensive products necessarily work better?
Not necessarily. I mean, I don't think expense is the answer for what works better. Some of the expense is because it's convenient. So some of the oral preventions are in a brown chewy cube versus a pill. Some of the heartworm preventions are in an injection that lasts longer versus in a pill that they have to take every month. It just varies on what it is, but I don't think necessarily expense or dollar amounts with the dollar signs behind it means it works any better or any worse. I think it's just a matter of what works best for that pet. A little bit like nutrition, right, on how things work.
Yeah. We're talking with Dr. Doug Kratt from Central Animal Hospital in Onalaska. He's also president-elect of the American Veterinary Medical Association, and we are taking your calls, your questions about pet health. 800-642-1234. There's a line for you. That number again, 800-642-1234. What has your experience been like these last couple of months with your pet? Maybe you've spent extra time with them. Are you having trouble focusing on work with your pets around? And maybe you're wondering what happens when you go back to work or are out of the house more often and you've spent so much time with your pets. We're talking about behavior and nutrition and exercise and illness here on The Morning Show with veterinarian Dr. Doug Kratt. Again, that number 800-642-1234. We just talked about the Lyme disease vaccine. What other vaccines are important for cats and dogs to have to prevent diseases?
Well, in Wisconsin, you know, I'll talk about the rabies vaccine, and I know that the rabies virus is relatively low in portions of the state and maybe a little bit higher, but that's a zoonotic disease, i.e. that can transmit from our pets back to us. And so that one is required for the dogs and the cats. Then there is, for dogs, the distemper and the parvo vaccines that are in the hepatitis vaccines that are portions of it. But again, you know, vaccines have become our thought process on vaccines in the last decade or couple decades has changed. We really try to tailor it to the lifestyle of, again, of the pet. So a pet that lives in a high rise in downtown Milwaukee might have different needs for a vaccine than a pet that lives in La Crosse, Wisconsin, and is a that's out in the woods and helping fish and all of that type of stuff. So those are conversations that are really individualized, and I recommend that relationship with their veterinarian to find out what's best. I can't really paint it with a broad brush on what a dog needs or a cat needs or a ferret needs or whatever the, or, you know, or I guess horses or whatnot. It all depends on the risk factors of the region that they're living in.
Yeah, and what about the cost of the vaccines? I mean, do you have to have the conversation about how expensive something might be with your clients?
We always, I don't want to blindside my clients on anything. So, you know, we offer estimates on the care that is being offered every day and options with respects to care. And I'm very realistic to understand cost can be a barrier to some things. It's the vaccines are very important, but really going to your veterinarian, the examination and the discussion of overall health is even more important because, as we talked about with one of the people that works there, we can discover heart disease earlier. If you can discover heart disease earlier, we can live a longer, more fulfilled life by potentially treating that earlier. There's also issues potentially on dental care, and is there dental disease going on? How does that affect your pet? Or are we starting, is the doctor starting to see signs of lameness in the room that you may miss because it's happening every day with you? And then what if we happen to check the stool sample and see intestinal parasites and, sure, and how that can be? And do any of those transfer back to us?
Right. We're talking with Dr. things. Doug Kratt. I'm just going to jump in here quick because this is The Morning Show and you're listening on the Ideas Network. We're talking about pet health here on The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. We've covered precautions in a pandemic, food options and vaccinations, exercise and more. Our guest is Dr. Doug Kratt. He takes care of pets' medical needs at his office in Onalaska. And Allison from WPR recently adopted a rescue dog, says the dog's been a great addition, except she gets super out of control when new people visit. She says the dog once did a backflip. Any tips on helping to train this dog to calm down when visitors arrive, Dr. Kratt?
I think you hit it. It's the desensitization and the training, right? So we probably need to set up scenarios with friends and family to have them come over, use positive reinforcement training. So getting her to sit before anybody comes in the comes in the house or the apartment, kind of keeping it low key. Sometimes they get amped up because we're getting amped up and we're anxious about how she's going to behave when the pets come. But I think continued repetition of rewarding the behavior we're looking for, but setting it up as kind of doing our homework, setting up scenarios where we can do it all of the time so that it becomes less and less of an issue.
All right. So we can try to adjust that and also think of our own behavior when things like that happen and we know it's going to be stressful for the dog. We've got Becky in Waterford on the line now. Good morning, Becky.
Hi, good morning. I just wanted to talk briefly about an experience I had taking my 6-year-old wiener dog Rottweiler mix to the ER during COVID. He had a seizure out of the blue, never had one. I was really panicky and upset. But the experience I had was really, really good despite not being able to go in with him. The vet kept me posted through the phone and the communication was great. So despite having to deal with the virus, I was really pleased with how well my animal was cared for and treated, even though I couldn't be there with him. But my question is, with my dog having a seizure for the first time ever and he's 6, I know it's hard to pinpoint why he had it, but I'm kind of nervous if it's going to happen again. Is there anything I can look out for, or is there any rhyme or reason why it might have happened at 6 for the first time?
So, Becky, that's a great question. I guess I'll have a follow-up question. Have you seen any activity or anything that gets you anxious since that time?
No, not at all.
So, you know, seizures in dogs is not normal, but I would tell you is not completely uncommon as well. That doesn't mean to say every pet gets them, but I do see dogs that have seizures at my practice regularly. Now, that doesn't mean daily, but just regularly. You know, there's numerous things that can cause seizures. Sometimes we think of the sinister things like poisonings or organ disease. Sometimes it's that they have an infection someplace that can be causing it. And then some dogs have epilepsy or no real reason, what they call idiopathic epilepsy. I say a $5 term for a disease process. You know, it's important what I do with my clients here is we try to keep a log of when the seizures have happened to see if we can find out if there's anything that incites it, number one. Now, that being said, is we're not observing our pets 24 hours a day, 365 days a year. So we look at what things have happened as well. So making sure that going back to your general practitioner to discuss how they handle it, I think is going to be important. Make sure you're both on the same page. Becky brought up another really good point, and I don't want to minimize the seizure portion of it. Thank you for your feedback on how it went for you. Realize most veterinarians haven't had to practice in a pandemic. So we're kind of trying to adjust and adapt for the best of our clients, for the best of our patients, for the best of our staff as we go along, and kind of remembering we're all in this together. And it was very nice hearing that positive feedback, and hopefully you fed that feedback back to those workers there, because a nice pat on the back will take them a long ways as well.
Yeah, Dr. Kratt, thank you so much for your time today.
Thank you for having me today.
Dr. Doug Kratt is from Central Animal Hospital in Onalaska, also president-elect of the American Veterinary Medical Association, and we've been talking about keeping our pets healthy. And now it's time for Wisconsin Life. Here's producer Steve Gotcher with a story about a self-employed dog trainer and how the pandemic has affected his way of life.
It's been a few months since people have had to make changes in their lives because of COVID-19. Some get to work from home, and some folks still have to go to a workplace using extra caution. And still others lost their jobs when the businesses they worked at closed. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, George Malara filled his work days with dogs.
I drive around in my old Honda Odyssey, and I pick up dogs all over Madison, and we end up on my property, and we run and play with the dogs in a fenced-in area.
Malara owns Divine Canine Dog Training and Want to Go Outside Playgroup Service. We talked at his private play area while his new pup Dolly, his other dog Suka, and my dog Sasha played in the yard.
Since the pandemic hit, I felt it more responsible to not go into my clients' homes because not only do I have clients that are doctors and pediatricians and doctors that work in the ER, but I also have clients that are a little bit older that could be more so compromised because of the virus. So I felt it responsible to sort of cut back on that and stop my playgroup service so that I could help flatten the curve and do my part.
Come here, Dolly.
After canceling my playgroup service due to the pandemic, that was essentially 85% of my income. You know, the playgroup is my bread and butter, and I would train dogs and do classes in the evenings, Monday through Friday. The difficult part of this is, for me, the withdrawal from the dogs. These dogs are absolutely a part of my life, and I call them my babies, I call them my buddies, I call them, you know, I develop a bond and I work with them daily. And to go cold turkey like that has been incredibly difficult, emotionally. It's what I've been doing for 20 years. I don't know what to do with myself. I have all the work I'm doing. I'm shooting videos and adapting with my training business to offer more stuff virtually. But the playgroup is what I really miss the most.
Very good girls. Very good girls.
Originally, I went to college to become a CBT, a certified behavioral therapist, working with children. And my college funds ran out, and I was unable to continue going to school. My roommate and I adopted a dog named CJ, and he had some behavioral issues. And I took what I learned in the little bit of college that I went to and applied it to my dog, and it worked. I'm what you call a crossover trainer. So when I first started training dogs, I used some aversive techniques. I would, like, pop a leash if the dog was doing something wrong, or I would verbally reprimand. But as I evolved as a trainer, my techniques got sweeter and more scientific. I started using carrots instead of the whip. I think what I really love is seeing how happy the dogs are socializing. My favorite thing to watch is just all the little behaviors that they do, the communication that they have. I often say, like, I'm Jane Goodall. Like, I just get to watch these behaviors during playgroup and all the subtleties that they are able to express in these little tiny minute movements in their bodies.
Now that many of us are spending more time at home, we have an opportunity to focus on our pets. So where's a good place for us to start?
Oh, lots of training. There's so many things you can do and teach your dogs. You know, you can go on YouTube and just type in positive reinforcement training, or another technique that I love is shaping. You know, shaping games with your dogs. Just play with your dog. People think training means obedience, and that's not really the case. Training your dog could be anything. It could be something silly like a trick, or something complex like a freestyle, which is a dance routine with your dog.
Besides trying to figure out ways to stay in touch with his clients and help them work with their dogs, Malara is working on finding his way in this time of seclusion.
I'm taking this isolation in stride, and I'm learning a lot about myself in terms of being alone and just being patient with myself and just being with my emotions as they come. Sometimes I feel great, and sometimes I feel down. You know, it's like, I love that saying, it's okay to not be okay, and it's okay to not be productive. When the stay-at-home effort is here, it's to keep everybody safe. Nobody's being punished here. Nobody's in trouble. But if we continue to go out, and this is going to keep going unless we take care of it. And it's we, not me. We all have our part.
Oh, if you don't know how to do it, I would show you how to walk the dog.
Wisconsin Life is a co-production of Wisconsin Public Radio and PBS Wisconsin, in partnership with the Wisconsin Humanities Council. Additional support comes from Lowell and Mary Peterson of Appleton. Find more Wisconsin Life at wisconsinlife.org and on Facebook. I'm Steve Gotcher.
And this is The Morning Show. I'm Keely Boltina. You're listening to the Ideas Network.